You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
This is episode 7 of Stable Riding with Solange. This is Solange Ellis, founder of Stable Riding, for the February 24th, 2026, episode 7 of Stable Riding with Solange, part of Horses in the Morning. I am here the fourth Tuesday of every month to talk to you all about the rider and how we can make ourselves better in the saddle. I am 40 years old, which now that I am 40, feels not that old at all. But when I dropped out of school and got my GED with the men from the local prison at the age of 15 to start breaking horses to ride, it felt impossibly old, like I could not even imagine being 40. Now, do I feel 40? Honestly, and I thought about this as I prepared to start writing this pod, I feel about 25, which I'm happy with. I think this is due to my active outdoor lifestyle and my recent commitment in the last year to stop eating like a raccoon. Age is one of those inevitable and immutable facts of life. It's the prize you win for not dying, which is pretty great when you think of it like that. There are definitely many negative and widely held social beliefs around age, and those, of course, bleed into the athletic world. There's a sweet spot age for many sports. Not a lot of professional football players in their 60s or Olympic gymnasts in their 50s. But in horses, it's a whole other ballgame. You can ride as old as you like and are willing. I routinely teach riders in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, and in the past have taught both men and women in their 80s. When we ride, we borrow speed, strength, and stamina from our equine partners, so there's no actual physical reason why a 60-year-old cannot ride as well, as fast, or as long as someone in their 30s. It just depends on the individual, their goals, their personality, and what they're willing to invest, regardless of their chronological age. Horses are both time-consuming and expensive, so often riders either come to it when they're 40 or older, or they're finally able to return to it after decades of college, marriage, work, kids, etc. In terms of sports, how often do old people start them? I suspect much less than in riding. So if lots of us old folks are riding, let's talk about it. Here's my professional opinion. It's important that adults learn new skills. I think it's really good for our brains. And if that new skill requires physical movement, I think it's even more beneficial. Sudoku is good. Tai Chi or ballroom dancing is even better. Riding gives us all a mental challenge as well as a physical one. It keeps us moving and learning while also helping us hone our emotional regulation. I'm hard-pressed to think of another activity that's so good for us all the way around, mind, body, and soul. So I think we can all agree that riding has many tangible benefits as we age, but it's not without risk. The question is, how does one balance that? How does a rider enjoy themselves and meet their goals, while at the same time knowing that over a certain age, a fall from a horse will exact a higher physical cost? That's where I come in. It's my job to keep my famous Fabergé egg riders in one piece. If you know that a fall will cost you more than it used to, it's time to make stability your priority. Your horse choices, tack choices, and decisions should be perhaps a little more conservative. And your riding practice should focus on techniques and habits that keep you stable and help your body move well both in and out of the saddle. See, as I age, I think less about the number on the scale or how I look in a cocktail dress and more about my mobility. I want to wake up in the morning and be able to turn my head both ways, the same amount, and I want to be able to reach down and touch my toes. The future of my personal riding and being able to keep doing what I love to do on a horse, which is going really fast. I know that mobility is the key. So when I teach riders 40 and older, I talk a lot about how riding as a movement discipline should benefit your body in your everyday life. Now, real quick, let me say this with great seriousness. Riding shouldn't hurt. That's going to be one of my t-shirts. Riding shouldn't hurt on the front and stable riding on the back. Now, you're allowed to be sore the next day, as riding is an exercise, but it should not cause you pain while you were doing it or afterwards. Soreness is okay. Pain is not. So if you're a rider of any age who's experiencing pain while riding or from your riding, reach out to me. I can help. If you are in pain, it is because you're in the wrong tack, your stirrups are the wrong length, or you are out of skeletal body alignment. These are all fixable problems. Let me help you. I am passionate about riders feeling better in their bodies for being riders. So often I meet riders who were schooled to contort themselves into an unnatural and unstable position for the show ring when they were young. While this may have earned them the approval of the judges and the ribbon that they really wanted, it causes injury and strain that follows into adulthood and beyond. Nothing makes me more upset than a young, sweet kid in their late teens or early 20s who's already experiencing knee, ankle, hip, and back pain from an unsustainable equitation position. These riders are so young, they often assume that the pain they're in is a fault of their own, that they're not fit enough or they're not built to ride, when in reality, it was incorrect instruction. Our assumption of needing to suffer for our art and the cultural habit of not being willing to question authority or tell truth to power is literally physically harming us. This is something I am insistent on changing. I know personally the benefit that riding as a movement practice makes in my own body. I feel it every day. So with my adult and older riders, we talk constantly about how position in the saddle is beneficial for their body and other everyday motions and positions. I'm forever asking them when they're finished with their ride and are leaving to text me the next day and let me know how they are feeling. What is sore, if anything, and what feels better? This is vital data for an instruction to have if we are to craft these riders into the best versions of themselves. My students in the past have ranged from 5 to 85, and they all deserve a stable, effective, and pain-free riding experience. Once again, I have outdone myself in the guest department for today's episode. Seriously, you guys, I'm going to start like running out of ways to describe how great my guests are soon. Today, I have the wonderful Pam. Pam is one of my weekly lesson students who immediately came to the top of the list when I started laying out pod topics because I knew I wanted a rider who represented this age group. Hey, Pam, thank you again for being willing to share your story on the Stable Riding Pod.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm happy to do it.
I think we're going to have a really great time. This is going to be a really fun conversation. All right. Are you ready, Pam, for the questions?
I'm ready.
Okay. Are you comfortable telling the dear listeners how old you are, Pam?
Sure. On Valentine's Day, I turned 70. And I just want to point out that that's by far not the oldest of the riders you've had. I'm just presently the oldest one.
It is true. You are not anywhere near the oldest rider that I have had, but you are currently my oldest consistent like weekly rider that I have. And that's why I chose you for today's guest. Okay. I always like to start with a story of how we met, but I'm going to admit I do not remember. I feel like it was maybe 7 years ago. You came to me to learn to ride. And I know it was pre-COVID and that my little spotted pony Pop-Tart was still alive. And it was before your granddaughter Kit was born. Am I right so far? What do you remember about us meeting?
So I retired in November 2018, and I'd been thinking for years about going back to riding, even though I didn't ride. I hadn't ridden since I was 14, but I love horses, and I always thought about getting back into it. So it took me a while to get up the bravery to call. Well, first, I looked at all the websites, and I really liked what you said. This was your old website on your website. So I finally emailed you and you said, come see the barn. And I came that day and I remember I came around the corner into the arena and there were, because something was going on, there were a lot of people there. And I thought, I don't want to go into strange people. And then you popped out and said, are you Pam? I'm Solange. And so that's how we started. I set up my first lesson. This was funny, especially this year. I set up my first lesson and you texted me that morning and said, we'd had like 8 inches of snow. And said, I'm going to change your lesson because of the snow. And I said, no, because I mean, I really had worked myself into being a this. And I said, no, I can get up your hill. And you said, no, my plow guy hasn't even been here. And I said, are you sure? And you said, no, we're changing it. And I was like, okay. So, and then from there on, off we went.
Wow. I don't remember any of that, Pam, but I believe we got 8 inches of snow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially after what happened this winter.
Yeah.
So what made you decide to start riding again? Because you said that you started riding, you were riding when you were young, like when you were 14. So what made you decide to come back to it?
Well, I started riding when I was younger. I had a friend who had a farm who had a horse, or maybe mm-hmm. horse, I can't remember. And we rode with no instruction. And I remember asking my parents if I could have riding lessons. And my mom found a farm. We lived what at that time in Illinois was countryside. Now it's a massive stores. Mm-hmm. But I started riding and I really didn't like it because it was a barn that did shows. Mm-hmm. And I was a nervous wreck for that kind of thing. And you would draw which horse you got. And I, the first show I got Popcorn,
who was Popcorn, this
white, horrible horse. I got sixth place out of sixth. And I thought, oh, okay, I don't like this anymore. So then I just rode on and off with friends. And then my dad passed when I was 13, and then we couldn't afford anything like riding anymore. So then I didn't ride anymore, but I really always thought how much fun it would be to ride again. So that's where I went. So I hadn't ridden for 50 years when wow. I came back to you. Yeah. So it was slightly nerve-wracking and also very fun.
It's so interesting. I mean, I talk to riders all the time, but often I'm not getting like their full backstory the way I do here on the pod, you know, because I'm not asking these really like, hyper-specific questions. Yeah. But so often you hear, I rode when I was young, I loved it, and then I couldn't for some reason. And for decades, I've always wanted to come back to it. And it just reinforces my awareness that riding's a thing that it's like it's in your blood, you know?
Yeah.
Because other people could go their whole life and going, there's no way you could pay me to get on the back of that horse.
Right. And quite a few people did say that to me, but it just, I love horses. I love animals.
Yeah.
And I just always thought I've got to try it again, see if I still like it.
And you totally did. I'm so glad you decided to try it again.
Yeah, me too.
Now, did you get any pushback from anyone, like you mentioned, when you decided to start back and take back up riding as a retirement activity?
Well, some people immediately said, oh, I don't like horses, which has nothing to do with anything, I felt. But
true.
No, I really didn't get a lot of pushback. People looked at me. A couple brave people said, well, how much does that cost? Which I didn't answer. And then, but my husband was very supportive. My kids were supportive, although perhaps after I told them, they called each other and said, what is she doing now? But no, most people were just like, wow, interesting, you know, and not the kind of hobby you think of as a retirement hobby. But, you know, my only hobby that I really love is cooking and reading, but cooking. And after I retired, I didn't realize how horrifyingly bored I would be. So riding was fun. And then I discovered volunteering and now things are much better.
I've taught so many people in their retirement or when they do retire, and they always tell me that they're busier when they were retired than they were when they were working because they finally have time to do all the things that they've always wanted to do.
Right. But it takes a while to get there. I retired in November because I thought, oh, it'll be so busy, Christmas busy. Mm. In January 2019, I thought, oh my gosh, what have I done? And my husband has so many hobbies, as you know.
I do.
So he was very busy. And I was like, I have absolutely nothing to do. So you really have to work at getting things going.
Now, do you want to tell everybody what you retired from? Because I know, but they don't.
I'm a labor and delivery nurse, 40 years. Which was one of the reasons I couldn't ride sooner. In that job, you can't say, I need every Wednesday off for riding lessons. You can't, you can't do it. So, and plus you're really busy when you're working, even though your kids are all grown up and gone and you're tired.
Talk about going from, you know, a bustling hive of endless activity with women just having babies all the time to being retired. Yeah. That's a stark contrast, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you have a specific goal when you started your lessons, and has that goal shifted at all over the years?
I don't know if I had a specific goal. I just wanted to get back in it. I wanted to be around horses. I pictured myself, you know, maybe trotting and cantering through the woods with my 1-inch long hair flowing behind me. but really, when it came down to it, I found that I was happier not doing quite as much active stuff. I liked walking and trotting. I love cantering in the arena. Mm-hmm. There's more of a worry at this age of what will actually happen if you do fall off. And mm-hmm. so start to think a little bit differently. One thing that helped my goal was when I realized, and I guess you probably told me too, that people have riding vests. Mm-hmm. So I got a vest, and you do feel safe in the vest because it's just so thick. So it does make you feel like, okay, you're definitely not going to break any ribs or anything else if you fall off in this. So that helps. And what I really liked, which I didn't realize I would get to do as a goal, is I ride so many different horses.
Yeah.
Stable. I didn't know if I would start on, I didn't know I would start on Tulip, which I did. And then Tulip, of course, can't be urged to do anything other than walk. But when I was on Tulip, what is Tulip, a Percheron?
Yeah, Tulip's a Percheron, 17 yeah. hands. She's 19 this year.
So she was very far from the ground. And even though I was walking, I was like, wow, this is interesting being way up here.
Yeah.
Then you start riding different horses and you realize you really, if you're doing things the way you teach, you can ride any horse.
Mm-hmm.
So that
was true, Pam.
That's really helpful. That, I mean, I've ridden all sizes, all kinds of horses that buck and I don't fall off. The first time someone bucked and I said, what was that? And you said, he bucked. It was Baby. And,
yes, and it would have been Baby.
Because you're very blunt, I said, why did he buck? And you said, because you're not riding him properly. So yeah, it makes you think, well, I certainly don't want to hurt this horse. So maybe I should shape up and do exactly what he tells me. But the other thing is there's so many instructions, you know, you're thinking to yourself, okay, I'm sitting up straight. My shoulders are down. I'm yes. looking up. I've got my hips in the right place. I'm not gazing at the ground. That was a big problem for me for at least a year. I was mm-hmm. absolutely sure the horse was going to trip. So my mm-hmm. job was to look ahead of him.
Because that'll fix it, right?
Because then he won't trip when we both see the thing he's going to trip over. So, and then you find out that if I'd listened to you and looked up, the whole thing would have gotten better right away. So, you know, it takes some trial and error. And maybe that's also an age thing that, you know, if I were 25 and not worried about anything, I would look up, have my shoulders down, you know, do this, do that, and everything would be right away. But you got to think about it a little more.
So, as a lady who teaches riders in their 20s, they don't necessarily, it's still a complex interaction for them as well, but they're usually not as worried about falling off.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they have a little bit more freedom, I think, yeah. in that regard.
And as a quick side, when I did fall off of Baby, it was so non-dramatic. I was, after my lesson, out back behind the barn. He was mm-hmm. grazing. Mm-hmm. And it was so hot and I was probably half asleep. I had thought, because it was so hot, I remember I had thought about taking my vest off and then thought, no, just leave it on until you're done. And he saw somebody come around the corner and I did not see them. And he leaped to the left and I flew off to the right, landed in the mud. And I know the first thing I said to you when you came around the corner was, because I had just started physical therapy, and I said, my physical therapist is going to kill me.
I remember that.
I wasn't hurt. I've ridden Baby 10 million times since then. Part of the reason I wasn't hurt was because I landed in the mud.
Yes, very handy.
And Sean was there and he thought that was all pretty interesting. But yeah, so once you fall off and realize, oh, I'm just standing up, I'm fine, it takes a little bit of the fear out of it. So that was probably good that I fell off.
There is a point in time where if a rider has been riding and they have yet to fall, they've almost gone too long because now it looms in their head as this big uncertainty because it hasn't occurred to them yet. So right. there's like an ideal time with which to fall off and realize, I would much rather stay on. But if I do fall off, the world's not going to end. And right. when I start talking seriously about falling and falls with riders, what I have observed consistently throughout my career is that the position you're in and how well you're riding when the fall occurs has direct correlation to the amount of injury you sustain from said fall.
Yeah.
And this, if you're in the horse industry, you'll see people have what look like horrible wrecks, and then the person stands up and has like a scrape on their finger. And then I've met people in the lab that have fallen from a stand on a standing horse, like their horse was standing still and spooked and they fell, or were walking or were mounting or were dismounting and fell and sustained an injury that like required surgical intervention.
Oh, yeah.
And people always go, well, it's just, you know, it's just the odds. And I want to look at them and go, well, actually, if you're in a good position immediately before the fall occurs, you really decrease your chance of injury after the fall, because I have seen it. Because, you know, I tell people I do actually professionally watch people fall off for a living. That's like part of my, you know how they always go explain a movie badly? If someone came to me and said, explain your job badly, I'd say I get paid a lot of money to stare at people's butts all day.
I
always know when someone loses weight, like before their husband does. I'm like, hey, did you lose weight?
I remember the first fall, the only fall I've seen was I was tacking up somebody and Waffles came around the corner and her rider was bareback and cantering and she slid off right in front of me. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then she immediately said, did she kick me in the helmet? And I was, and I had seen it and I said, no, you just landed. But then I was like, oh my gosh, this is real. They do fall off.
It's real. We do fall off. And we go, do we have to buy a new helmet? Because I just bought this one. And it was $600.
Yeah.
That's the first. Do I have to get a new helmet? I just got this one. That's what we're always asking.
Yeah.
Okay, Pam, since you've been with me for so long, you were riding with me before I started the lab and got in all my tools that I train my riders on. I remember you being a rider who was very open and willing to try out all the new stuff in the lab. And I believe that you've ridden it all. You've been on the Mighty Bucky, you've been on the Home Horse and the Equisizer. How do you like having the lab and its tools as an option for you along your riding journey?
I really enjoy the lab. I'm going to point out the Mighty Bucky, I was not riding to learn like bucking things. I was doing balance on that. So it's not... I've seen people on it for the bucking part, and that was definitely not me. But yeah, I did learn balance. I think the Home Horse, the Equisizer, the Mighty Bucky, they help so much, because you come in, you're not on a horse that's going to do anything weird underneath you, but you're learning exactly how you should be positioned as you ride and should something weird go on underneath you. So you're riding. I think it's especially for an older person, balance is so important. And all three of these things, especially the Home Horse, teach and make you be balanced. If you're doing it right, which takes a bit, your balance becomes so much better. And also your flexibility. It's just amazing what it does for things like hips, shoulders. You know, I really enjoy riding those. And I also like, and this is probably because I'm older, but if it's, you know, like 20 degrees, I would really much prefer to ride in the lab. So, I'll just, you know, text you and say, could we do the lab today? It's kind of chilly.
Yeah.
And then we have a great time in the lab. The classes that you were having that you practiced and wrote out are awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My stable flow classes, my little group workout classes.
Right. So helpful. So helpful. And then, you know, you get on your horse and you think, okay, now what did I learn? And it all comes together and your brain goes, wow, this really works. You know, why didn't I listen to her sooner? But it really helps to have the horse under you. It's not a horse. So it's making all the right movements, but you're not going to fall off. And if you do something wrong or your foot falls out of the stirrup, absolutely nothing's going to happen. So it's a great confidence builder. Plus it's just great for your body.
It is. So. I think riders don't realize that a lab lesson is going to be more work than a horse lesson.
Yeah, it is a lot of work.
But it really is, because you come in and you just start. There's no tacking up. There's no warming up. There's no walk breaks. And all the tools are basically self-powered. So you're making the whole motion happen yourself as opposed to the horse assisting you. So you can make 30 to 50 minutes in the lab a real workout if you want it to be.
Oh, absolutely. When I did your lab lesson Monday, and it was the hips and legs lesson.
Yes. Yeah.
The next morning when I started down the stairs, I was like, ow, ow.
Yeah. You could tell. You're like, I did something.
It's a real workout.
It's the good kind of sore.
Yeah.
Okay. You and I are both sisters in neck pain and migraines, not from horses, from other things we want to tell the audience, but Pam and I both have shoulder, neck pain, and migraines. And as we age, our bodies collect bumps and injuries and joints that let us know it's going to rain. What about your body at this age has affected your riding? And has riding horses or working in the lab helped you with your body off the horse in your everyday life?
Yeah, and that's one thing I want to make clear. My neck issues have nothing to do with riding. They're from way before. So not that I knew about them, but turns out when I said to my doctor, I'm not an athlete, why do I have neck issues? He said, because you're a nurse. And that was the end of it. So apparently that was that. So we've talked about migraine medications. You sent me to the miracle worker physical therapist who said these migraines are all from your neck and then fixed them. So now I'm down to one or two a month instead of 6 to 8.
Isn't that just amazing? It's so much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so much better. But you do collect bumps and bruises, and you also know that you're not as resilient as you were when you were younger. So as you collect bumps and bruises, you think, you know, I don't want to break anything. I volunteer at hospice, and while I'm not old enough for a broken bone to cause anything other than, you know, discomfort and inconvenience, so many hospice patients are in because they broke a bone, and that was the final straw. So I really think about, you know, keeping in shape, and, you know, 70's not old. I'm hoping I have, you know, 20 or 30 years more. My kids will listen to this and go, what? But the riding doesn't make anything worse. I have never had a physical therapist or a doctor say, don't ride. Like I said before, the flexibility you get from riding is just amazing. And that's so key, because the thing you don't want to lose, especially, is your lower body mobility. If you can't get up from a chair, can't get down the stairs, then you're in trouble. So you can stay. And if you can keep your balance is so big. So balance and flexibility, plus listening to you and listening to the physical therapist, and riding doesn't cause headaches, doesn't cause me to hurt anywhere other than my legs, but that's because they're exercising.
Right.
So, that and the fact that you sent me to the physical therapist that fixed the migraines, that's, you know, I will forever be grateful for that. So
shout out to Megan.
Megan. So, and the lab, like the lab is the same thing. You're working on the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And like you said, you're working for 50 minutes.
Yes.
There's no stop. There's no walk for a minute. I mean, there are 1 minute rest, but there's no, you know,
right,
let's chat for a minute while I'm not doing something. No. You're moving the whole time in the lab.
What other motion or movement practices do you have other than riding?
I do a water aerobics class twice a week, sometimes three if I'm really motivated. And we love to hike, so we do a lot of hiking. Truthfully, most of my falls come hiking. I seem to trip over any tree root that shows up. So, but that and just general daily life, you know, you keep moving, walk with people.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's, that's what I love the swimming, because there's no, I was told, you know, no more high or low impact exercising, and the swimming is just really fun. And it's just as cardio if you want it to be. It's, swimming is definitely a thing that each person individually decides how much they want out of it. You know, there's 80-year-olds and 85-year-olds in the back row kind of dog paddling around, but those of us in the front are making an actual, a really good aerobic workout with it. And it's really good for flexibility, because we do lots of things that are hard to do on land,
right,
arms and legs, that you can do in the water that strengthen your joints, which is the real key.
Yeah. No, I think that's excellent for you, and you should definitely keep doing it. And I'm sure it has a very positive effect on your riding, because it's all that motion, mobility, and, you know, it's a little bit of cardio, it's some stamina, some endurance. Right. So,
right.
How long are you planning on riding for, Pam?
Well, I had to think about this question, because you know that Scott originally said he'd stop playing soccer when he was 70, and then turned 70 and said, well, no, I don't really feel like I'm ready for that. So I think that as long as I enjoy it and nothing hurts, And no one has said, you know, no medical person has said to me, you know, this is going to get worse if you keep riding.
Right.
That would probably make me stop. But otherwise, I think, you know, I'll keep riding. My bones like it. I'm sure my muscles like it. So I'll keep riding.
Good. I'm glad, because I really want to keep teaching you. All right. In conclusion, what advice would you give a rider who thinks that they're too old to start riding or too old to keep riding?
Well, I would say if you really want to try it, do it. If they go to you, you will be making them feel safe and comfortable on a horse. They can start now in the lab, which means they can learn all the basic things on a non-horse, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
If I had ridden before and started with you now, I think I would start with, because you didn't have intensives when I started, but I think I would start with a one-day intensive and just get a review. Because, you know, with your intensive, I think usually you do part in the lab and part on a horse.
I do.
That would be such a great review to start with if you've ridden in the past and just haven't ridden in a long time. And, you know, with you, I can discuss concerns, physical limitations. You were great at helping me rehab the shoulders and the neck.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that starting, whatever your age, starting now, try it. Try it. Like you told me once, if I end up at some point just saying I'm going to walk and trot for an hour, then I'll walk and trot for an hour. And it'll make me feel good. So it's not that you have to continue on and, you know, until you say to them, you know, you should be galloping by now, because that's not going to happen.
Right. You know, right. Not everybody's going to be galloping and jumping and riding high level dressage, and that's okay.
Right. Yeah. You just want to feel comfortable. Start in the lab. There's no fear in the lab, no worry about how it's going to go. And, you know, I can't think of a better trainer than you to either
thanks, start Pam.
Or continue someone on their way. So I would say do it. Do it. I mean, now if you're 95, I might think twice, but, you know, I've never considered 70 old. I've always thought that maybe 80 starts sounding old. So we'll see. We'll see. I know you've had 80-year-old riders, and I know you had an 80-year-old rider who brought her trailer with her horse.
Yes.
So,
yep, sure have.
Yeah. So, you know, you can, if you want to do it, do it. If you don't like it, you can stop.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I tell everybody. I'm like, it's not the draft. The government is going to knock on your door and make you ride a horse. Like, you get to choose. You get to see if you like it. And if you don't, you can stop or you can get off. But also, if you're considering it, it's not going to be magically easier a year from now.
No.
You know, I look at a lot of my riders and I go, how old are you this year? And they'll go, oh, I'm 57. I'm like, yeah, do you think it's going to be easier next year when you're 58 to learn this?
Yeah. And, you know, that was my problem.
The time is now.
Yeah. I couldn't quite get myself to send the email. And that is exactly what I thought. If you're mad that you didn't do it and you do it next year, what's different? Nothing.
Right.
You're
exactly.
63 or you're 64. What's the difference? So just do it. And then, of course, it snowed. But yeah.
8 inches.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can make it up your hill, honest.
That was so funny. I don't remember that, but that sounds like an exact conversation we would have. It sounds like us.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I'd say go for it.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Pam. This was a great conversation, and I hope it helps to inspire or encourage any riders out there. Every time we record a podcast, you know, I'm just talking in my office to a microphone, and it's not the same as when I teach in a lesson, because then I get immediate like rider feedback and, you know, listener feedback, and I can adjust if I need to. So I kind of just record these and hope that they like go out into podcast landia and they manage to meet someone and someone gets to hear something that they really needed to hear. So I think that that'll happen with this podcast, and hopefully somebody who wants to try it will give it a try.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. No matter what their age.
Thank you so much, Pam. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. It was really fun.
Pam is always such fun. She really is a ray of sunshine in my lesson roster, and I always look forward to teaching her. And sometimes, when I'm really lucky, she brings me homemade baked goods. I mean, come on. What else can a girl ask for? To round out this topic, I want to mention some of my most memorable riders over 60. In 2025, I was thrilled to train Hugh for his Mongol Derby run. Hugh came up to Ohio for two separate intensives as part of his preparation. Hugh is an instructor's dream, smart, fit, willing, and inquisitive. He prepared for all aspects of his Derby with a level of dedication and attention to detail, which really paid off. He completed his race without a hitch. He had zero pain from riding and crossed the finish line in better shape than he started 1,000 kilometers later. He was able to come home and immediately return to riding his personal horses with all the knowledge 100 hours of riding gives you. And he did it all at 60 years old. Next up is Christy, whom I met from my pool of South Carolina riders. She's my kind of lady, a trail rider and a fox hunter. I was able to train Christy for a three-day intensive to focus on her stability and her canter for the hunt field. Christy came to me after just one private lesson in Somerville, and I'm so glad she did. We had the best time working together in the lab, getting her stirrup length set and her lower leg position dialed in. She took to stable riding like a duck to water, and we had fun hauling to my local metro parks, where she was able to canter my big, lovely mare Tulip on long stretches and feel how truly awesome a deep seat can be. Christy rode 3 full days, cool as a cucumber, always in her chic pearl necklace, at the age of 70. I was very early in my career when I met William. If memory serves, I was probably only 20 when I started teaching him. William had his PhD in international economics and had helped NATO write the world budget. He'd been a college professor and was an avid student. I taught him for about 5 years, in which time he bought 3 horses and rode both English and Western. I took him to a local show where he, of course, brought home the blue ribbon. William was meticulous and committed in his riding and always had a smile on his face. This was pre-Google, so whenever me or one of the barn kids had a question about anything, we knew we could ask him. And he'd both have the answer and the patience to explain it to us. William started riding with me when his wife bought him a gift certificate for one lesson on his 81st birthday. See, dear listener, I know I can continue riding as I age because I have so many wonderful examples of it. On to today's rider tip and homework. I'd like to talk about stirrup retrieval, the act of being able to put your foot smoothly into your stirrup, especially after you've accidentally lost your stirrup and now need to get your foot back in. I chose this topic as many older riders struggle with stirrup retrieval, as it requires a certain kind of flexibility that we tend to lose as we age. When you take your foot out of your stirrup, or when you lose it unintentionally, a few things happen. Your stirrup, and I should pause and mention here that it does not matter if this is an English type, Western type, or a trail or endurance hybrid type. What I'm about to say is true with all stirrup types across the board in all disciplines. Your stirrup, when you take your foot out, will hang in a position that is higher than your foot. It will often be behind your foot, and it will turn so that it was parallel with the horse's side and will often become trapped between your leg and the horse's side. Now, it's more difficult to pick your stirrup back up in a light seat position, such as standing, posting, galloping, or two-pointing. So I recommend sitting back down into a deep seat to allow your seat bones to support and stabilize your body. This frees your lower leg up to move independently from your knee to recapture your stirrup. From that seated position, you'll need to perform a multi-step movement to pick that stirrup back up. First, you'll raise your knee up to the height that puts your foot level with the widest part of the stirrup. Too low, and your toe will kick the stirrup away from you. Too high, and your toe will be at the narrower top portion of the stirrup, and it'll be harder to get your foot in. Second, you need to bend your knee to bring your lower leg back behind the stirrup. Third, and this is the part that riders with limited mobility struggle with, you need to rotate your foot in, point your toe in towards the horse and the stirrup, and move your foot forward in an arc. I tell my stirrups it's like a crescent moon shape. This lets you hook the stirrup with your toe and slide your foot in. Now you may need to accept that you probably won't land with your foot in the perfect position on the stirrup. What'll happen is once you can just get your foot back in your stirrup, then you may need to tap your foot around until you have it settled on the ball of your foot with your pinky toe closer to the outside branch of your stirrup than your big toe is to the inside branch. If you struggle with that toe in motion, I have a few pieces of advice. One, you can think less about using your ankle or your knee to turn your toe in, and instead you can rotate your entire femur, your entire thigh, in from your hip. This is often easier and puts less strain on the joint in your lower leg. I also recommend offset eye stirrups that put the stirrup on a 90-degree angle from the horse. This makes putting your foot back in so much easier. For English riders, I recommend the MDC Super Sport irons, which allow you to click the offset the eye at the top to 90 degrees so your stirrup hangs perpendicular to the horse instead of parallel. For trail endurance and long distance riders, I recommend the Graysville Manufacturing J&S UltraTrek stirrups. These stirrups are the dream stirrup. They answer all the questions to all the problems that the long distance and endurance and trail riders have. For Western riders, you now have the option of buying a saddle with pre-turned fenders, where they sort of steam and bend the fender so that the stirrups are pointing towards you when you get on. If your saddle does not have that feature, you can add stirrup turners at the junction of the stirrup and the fender, but remember that those add length, so you'll need to subsequently adjust your stirrups after you add them. I also would look at the placement of the fender to make sure that it's pulled up as high as it goes into the saddle to allow the narrow portion to be at the bottom. That narrower portion of the fender is there to help give you more flexibility so that the stirrup can turn towards you. I also recommend looking inside the fender to see how thick and bulky the stirrup straps are. Trimming your excess stirrup strap inside the fender can reduce some of that bulk and make it easier to have the fender bend. A lot of petite women who have shorter leg lengths and are on wider horses in Western saddles will have knee and ankle pain because their stirrup is so short because they're so petite and their horse is so wide. And the fenders are so thick that the fenders are constantly putting like inward rotation torque on their leg, and it can cause them to have some ankle and joint discomfort. So particularly if you're a lady with a petite inseam in a big chunky Western saddle on a wide barreled quarter horse, this is something that you might really want to look into. All right, rider homework. I would like every rider I know to practice taking their feet in and out of their stirrups every time they ride. In the beginning, you can just do it standing still. If you're like, I'm really bad at this, then have somebody hold your horse and practice just sitting on your horse. Or you can do it at a walk. I recommend dropping and picking up just one side at a time, just one stirrup at a time. And if you do your right foot a bunch of times and then your left foot a bunch of times, it will soon become obvious to you which side is your good side and which side is your bad side. Once you can smoothly pick up each side individually, then you take your feet out of both stirrups and then you put them back in again. And if you know you have a tricky foot, when you take both feet out and you put both feet back in, I always recommend to my riders to try and put their tricky, sticky, more difficult foot in first and then their easier foot in second. Once you can walk and take your feet in and out of your stirrups and you're kind of bored about it, now it's time to go a bit faster. I recommend that you're able to take your foot out of your stirrup and put it back in again at the fastest gait that you normally ride. That way, if you're out and you're in that trot or canter or gallop and the bottom of your boot's muddy or your horse swerves around a stick or any of the other million reasons that your foot might come out of your stirrup, you've practiced ahead of time being able to put your foot back in your stirrup smoothly so that you don't panic and you can just keep riding. This is a particularly boring and unsexy exercise, so riders and sometimes riding instructors tend to skip it. But believe me, one day it will make the difference between you falling off and you staying on. As always, any questions, let me know. I'm here to help. You can find our show notes and links to today's guests and podcasts in the show notes on your podcast player or on our website at stableriding.us. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as Stable Riding. We are here once a month for the fourth Tuesday of every month. We have our own RSS feed. Just search Stable Riding with Solange in your podcast player, or you can find us on the main Horses in the Morning feed. All riders can be stable riders, and a stable rider makes for a happy horse.